According to the information that I was given, we are up to Kapitel Chafei. Last year I just stopped over there by Kapitel Chafei, and jumped to Lamed Beis and so on. We had three Tzukim in Lamed Beis, something like this. Anyhow, let's go to the Chafei. What we have over here in Iyav is, I'm sure everybody knows what the beginning of Iyav is like, is that Iyav had a lot of tzoros. And everything terrible that could possibly happen happened to him, and he was still alive. His children were killed, his nechosim were taken away, his body was made to suffer every type of sickness and suffering possible. So it got to a point where there was no yisurim that he wasn't soivel. Why was he given all those yisurim? So, according to the story that was told, it was because the Sotan asked if he could test the Yud. So it was B'derech HaNisoyen. But I'll throw in a certain Perish, like the Targum and Rashi brings constantly, that Iyav was a contemporary of Avraham Avinu, and that would explain that the Nisyonos weren't just ordinary Nisyonos, but they were Nisyonos to determine who's the Yechad HaMiuchad that's going to be the founder of the Am HaNivchor, and it had to be someone whose emunah was never shaken no matter what. According to the Gemara and Baba Basra, though, that it's not a davar pashut at all. Why? Because it's possible that Eve never existed. There's one Madon like that. Eve Lahoya Lahnivir. And according to many other Mandomrim, came from many different Kufas. He was together with Yitzray and Bilam by Parai, or he was in the time, even in the second bias. All kinds of different svaras where, when a yif was. So, there's even a tzad to say that the yif wasn't there in a mela. The whole lenin is for a moshel. What's the moshel there to teach us? It's to teach us a lot of the inyonim that are discussed in the yif, the kashis and the tzutzim, the discussion on hashgachet. And it's there, of course, to teach us, like Rashi says, that they know the mitzvah of tzarui, that when we see a person undergoing pain, we shouldn't argue with him and try to slug him up and prove he's wrong and all kinds of such things, and try to take him to account for any bad things that he said. Whatever he said was an expression of his pain, and he's not a chroi for it. And it, so, for Mela, there's a human lesson to be taught from him. The human lesson, as opposed to the philosophical question, is why we learn the Yivan Tishuba, just to be able to hear a little bit of the yogin of the pain expressions of Iyav, to sense along with him how a person feels when he's in great pain and when he's suffering. And that's the reason that we learn the Yivan Tishuba. So even if the Eiv existed, though, the one thing is clear. L'chayr of Poshet from Chazal, that the word, the Shakla V'Tarya, the thing that everybody said, each letter, is not literal. In other words, it's not like Bildo Hashuchi and Sefer HaMosi and Liza Satemoni, the three friends of Eiv. It's not like they said exactly this and Eiv answered exactly that. Now that those are words of Nevuah that were written by the Novi, who was the Mechaber of Eiv, and according to some it was Moshe Rabbeinu, and according to others it was someone else. If it happened after Moshe Rabbeinu, the Zichik can't be Moshe Rabbeinu. But somehow the questions and answers, the philosophy, is not a precise quote of what he said and what he said, but it's what the Novi, the Mechaber of Eiv, wants us to know. So whether he was Hoya V'Nivra or not Hoya V'Nivra, it's all the same, because of course the exact conversation is something that's there for us to learn from, rather than a quote that the Eiv said kach and he said kach. So the main thing, though, is that there are kashas. How come he suffers so much? How come Hashem doesn't communicate with people and sort of cuts them off from himself? And the various ideas that are brought up, some of which are common. The person who could say that Hashem is Baruch doesn't really care what happens to a person, and the old nesiyonos that he has are just there perhaps to give him schar on olam haba, but olam hazeh doesn't count at all. In chain, all the truths are meaningless, because if olam hazeh doesn't count, so anything could happen. On the other hand, it would seem that there is a hashkocha l'rah, because how could all bad things happen to one person? There must be some type of attack on the earth. Otherwise, what shayach to say that he should be singled out for some special suffering? These are the things that I've spoken about before. And naturally, you could divide them up into two groups. How come this tzaddik v'ra'loi? And the second kasha is, how come this rosh v'toivloi? Basically, there are three marochas in Eiv. The first marocha are arguments that and debates between the three friends of Eiv and Eiv. The three friends first being Eliphaz HaTemoni, and then Bildad HaShuchi, and finally Tzofer HaNamosi. And each of these presents an argument to explain the issue at hand. Eliphaz HaTemoni explains why this tzaddik v'ra'loi, and so does Bildad HaShuchi, and so does Sefer HaMosi, but each explain it in a much different way, one from another. And in each case, he answers them. And he answers and argues with them. And in every one of his answers, though, there's a tremendous amount of personal pain that he expresses. So the human side is interwoven with the philosophical side, and like I pointed out many times in the past, that's not just what makes it possible to learn it on Tisha B'Av, but it's what makes it possible to learn it at all, because otherwise you're not supposed to hear philosophical arguments that present a clear viewpoint that there's no hashgacha there. You're not supposed to listen to them, you're not supposed to talk about it. But to hear it expressed as some type of complaint of someone who's suffering very greatly, who's in pain, that you're allowed to hear. Because of course, you're not reasoning with a kaif of the ikir. But you're hearing the groaning and moaning of a kaif of the ikir, of a maimon rather. And in his Nemuna comes out various forms of a personal pain and groaning and complaint. So that expression is something that doesn't give you a sort of an opposing point of view, but it gives you an effect of the Yisurim of the Mele. It takes every sort of unutterable question, and it makes it possible to deal with. Okay, so the first large section of the year till Kapitel Chaf Aleph, over here with the numbers of the Kapitel, is the Mayrocha Rishoyna, which has the three arguments of Batzadik Firaloi and the answers of the year. The second one, which is a little shorter, is about three arguments discussing Yosha V'Toivloi. And why is it that we see what appears to be Yosha V'Toivloi, and it's really not Toivloi, and so on, and he finally answers all of them in the last manner. The third Mayrocha, it deals with a little bit more sort of complicated approach. And we only have two out of the three friends who answer, only Olivas HaTemoni, and only after that builded Hashuchi. And Sofer doesn't answer in the third Mayrocha. He just gives a long final answer to Bildad, and that's the end of it. And that's where we're holding. We're holding by the third Mayrocha, by Bildad, and we've managed the Chaperei in Kapitel Chafei, and that's just a couple of sukkim. We'll go over those sukkim and then go into the long answer that he has to give him. And from the words of Bildad, we'll see what his approach is. He tackles not Tzadik V'Raloi and not Rosh V'Toivloi, but the general approach of the entire world and how we have to look at everything so that there shouldn't be any kashas no matter what. And Vayan Bildad Hashufi Vayoyim Ham Shil V'Fachad Imoy Oyse Sholoim B'Meoyim. What he's saying is, in general, we'll see just a very, very short answer. He says that Vriya is too complicated and too deep for us to follow anything. It's like when a child will look at a complex piece of electronic equipment, and he'll try to understand how is it that the letters and the actions flash and appear, and there's no way you could really answer it because the Yesodos are much too difficult and beyond his comprehension. So you don't even have the tools and the wherewithal to begin to explain things to him. The most you could say is that there's something very deep, and it's beyond to you, your understanding, and this is the reason why all these things happen. So Bildad HaShuchi is adopting this approach now, and he's saying Hamshel V'Fachadim. Now Hamshel is HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules over the world, right? And V'Fachad means that we stand in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there are two things. There's one is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Memsholah, and there's one is his Metzius, the presence that we just sort of become totally bottled to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, and we have no way of even thinking of him. And that's taka true, because the Zohar wants people to say that all you could do is try to be masig the spheres, right? The upper worlds and the lower worlds and the middle level of world and the different levels of Hashpoah that come from the world, and those are all called spheres. But they're just the effects of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does to the and we relates to the Briya. But to think and be mafik in the Atmiyus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu itself is not only impossible, but it's also, and all that we're allowed to do is to have Pachad of Hashem. So he's saying Hamshil V'Pachad Imoy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rules over the world and relates to us in such a deep and impossible to relate to manner that there's no tachlis and even begin to study the hashgacha. So that's the hamshel. What do we do? Press the right button here on? Well, something like that. Okay. Works. Okay. Hamshel v'fachad imoy, that these things that we that are there with him are the rule, which is the hashpa in the shaykhus, the kesher with the world, is something that's beyond our understanding. And thinking of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is pachad. So those things are impossible. Oysa sholem b'mroimov. In the heavens, in the upper worlds, there are all kinds of opposing forces. And the opposing forces seek to annihilate each other, to eliminate each other. And it's all through these opposing forces that HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranges his forces in the heavens and have them work in some kind of manner which brings down his presence to this world. Now, he actually brings that Hamshel is a kinyan for the Malach Michoel, and Pachad is Gabriel. And Kuma to Yochel Hoshiv is heavenly. The various Pirushim on Oitha Sholem and Mirimov, of course, those are the three most famous words in the entire year, Oitha Sholem and Mirimov. No, glad the idea of Oitha Sholem and Mirimov is something that's borne out by the way the scientific world looks at the Bria, and we begin to see, and you could observe these things already. They're not things that you just could address mathematically, but you could actually watch them. You see the opposing electrical forces, right? There's the positive force and the negative force, and it all exists side by side in the Bria, and there's all kinds of relationships. And you have the electrons that surround the proton, and the proton is positive and the electron is negative. And not only that, but you have positrons too, and you have all kinds of things that contain forces which are opposite of each other, and they would annihilate each other. The matter would just totally disappear and leave some kind of energetic impulse in its wake. And then they Bichlal show all kinds of such relationships, things which there's magnetic forces that repulse and that attract. What the view of those who study the world from a physical point of view, it's very much in this category. You see that there's all kinds of forces, dynamic forces, and that they oppose each other, and that there's a subtle, serious blend of all these different forces working in unison with each other. The conclusion, of course, Rabbi said, that any Bar Das should come to is to see that if it's so that every single thing is arranged so carefully and that they don't annihilate each other and there isn't chaos but there's order, there must be a Rabbi Shlomo who ordered it, because just any combination of opposing forces would always tend to perform some type of entropy to just disintegrate and annihilate each other. And those are things that we see constantly. That's one of the basic rules. And how is it that the opposite of chaos results, and that what we see is so orderly and so carefully arranged? There must be a memshola, and there must be an awesome presence that creates this memshola in order to be oisei sholem b'milchemah, so that the deep forces that rule the cosmos should be able to relate to each other rather than oppose each other. That's something to think about. And the truth is that a person, a real ben das, who sees the natural world from the eyes of careful examination and study, will come to such a conclusion. It's only the fool that ends up thinking that since I know so much, therefore I'm so important, and I may like how to be a kaifer. Until now I believed in the Rebbeinu Shlom because I was primitive, I didn't know anything. But now that I'm so smart, so I have the right to be Rabin in myself, and that's how a scientist sort of gets his gaiva and is able to all of a sudden delude himself into thinking that he has some kind of special status. But the truth of the matter is that the gaiva is totally misplaced, because by being able to observe such plius chokhmah, he should realize that the more he sees, the more chokhmah there is, that there's an intelligence that's far beyond his capacity to comprehend, is in charge of making everything happen. But it's not an uncommon thing, Rabbi Isaac, to see that gaiva distorts a person's koyach to think. So the results are well known. Now, hayesh mispor l'gdudot, right? Chazal stressed this pasuk in Chagiga. They ask the kasha, they say that there's riboy rivavon, there's tens of thousands of malachim that oisgerechent in Daniel. And here it says hayesh mispor l'gdudot, that it's countless, it's infinite. So they want to say that each gedud is countable, but there's an infinite number of gedudim. And then they want to say that in a world of gilui ponim, it's infinite, and in the world of hesed ponim, there's something limited. Gilu, there's a limitation to kamal yishol ma'ilu, which is part of the hesed ponim of the golus. That's why there was four knafayim in the vision of Yecheskel, and the six knafayim in the vision of Yeshaya, because kan bisman shebeis hamikdash kayim, kan bisman shein beis hamikdash kayim. But all the different tzuritzim end up with one thing, that in the world of Gedudei HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Olam HaMalachim, things are so complicated and deep that there's no way for us to associate a number with it. It's infinite because numbers deal with physical things. And with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everything's infinite because it don't relate to numbers. Numbers are limitations. And by the Rebbeinu Shlom, there are no limitations. And once it's unlimited, b'meila, it's infinite. And unlimited and infinite are all the same. And v'almi lo yokem oirehu. In everything, all these different kedudim and all these malachim and the spheres of the hamshel and the asmius of the pachad, and everything is illuminated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And without his hashpoas oir, they have no existence. They only exist because of the oir that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them. I always say, you see a light coming out of a bowl, you look and you see the room is all lit up, right? You know that in this bowl there's a tube, and there's gas, and there's phosphorus, and there's electrodes, and that's all there is. There's nothing else there. So where does the light come from? The The light comes from the reaction of the objects in the bowl to the impulses of electricity that are flowing through the bowl. The minute they stop flowing, so there's nothing. So whatever you see is just a reaction to a flow of power that comes straight through it. And once each blast of light is separately generated. And so it is with sound, and so it is with anything. And in a much deeper sense, the matter that makes up the light, the matter that makes up the world, is also a blast of energy that's generated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's His Rotzon that makes everything exist. And the Or that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu just has to completely recharge the Metzius, and without that constant input of charge coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then the world would cease to exist. And that's the idea of Mechadish, B'tuve B'chol Yom Tov and Ma'ase B'Reishis. Ma'ase B'Reishis is something that was brought into existence because of Ratzon Hashem, but it continues to exist because of Ratzon Hashem. It never gained any independent Metzius that lives all by itself. Something akin to, you know, Frankenstein's monster. The man created a monster, and now the monster is independent of its creator. And we don't have any such monster. The Briyas doesn't have its own Metzius. The Metzius came about because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Rotzon. And once the Rotzon generated that Metzius, it continues to exist only through that Rotzon. Right? I mentioned the other day, that's why it says the Chassidim say over from the Baal Shem Tov, and he said there are two psukim. It says Bidvar Hashem Shemayim Nasu, and it also says V'Oilam Hashem Dvor Havnitzu B'Shemayim. Bidvar Hashem created the Metzius of Shemayim, but Shemayim continues to exist only because the Dvar Hashem still creates that Metzius. It's a constant Bria that takes place right in front of your eyes as the Metzius continues and perseveres. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu that puts the same input as in Ma'ase B'Reishis, so that there's no mystery in Mechadesh B'chol Yom Tov and Ma'ase B'Reishis, because the Chiddush, original Chiddush, is created the Metzius, and the Metzius still exists because of that Chiddush. Were the Chiddush to stop, were the original forces of Ma'ase B'Reishis to disappear, there would be no B'Reishis whatsoever. And that's Al Milo Yochem Oire. And then he says these two psukim. And then he comes to his conclusion very quickly. Uma Yitztak Yanoshem Keil, Uma Yitzke Yeludisha. So what's the use of all the arguments? How could you ever prove you're right? By proving you're right, you have to relate to the HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And all your relation to him is just pachat. And by proving you're right, you have to explain the manner in which he administers the Bria, and that's Hamashiach. And you have to understand all the relationships and opposing forces that's also shown in Roimo. You have to understand the input of Koyach that goes into the Bria. And you have to understand something that's infinite, which we can't. We can't relate to anything that's infinite. To us, infinity can't exist. There has to be limitations, because our Seichel is incapable of being Toifus, anything that has no limitations. So, Once we reach something that's built in Misfori, and our mind ceases to operate, to have any ability to relate to it. So if that's the case, my Yitztak, what are you going to say? How are you going to address it? My Yitzke Eludisha. So Bildad is not addressing any of the questions that Eeyub raised. He's just addressing the ability of a person to ask questions and to understand and to answer and to search for the truth. That just is totally beyond our means. That's the approach of Bildad. And then he completes it by repeating to a degree and explaining one of the points, Hein ad yoreach. The yoreach could cease to exist. Ad, what we say is that the word ad very often means Where do we find the word? Something that disappears is called ad, but the common word, we don't say vanashim ad noifach. The truth is that this is the pasuk that's always quoted whenever you want to show that ad means something that ceases to exist. It ain't ad yoreach v'lo yahil. But just escapes me where it's used. I'll think of something. But the point is that
earlier,
what
ad we had earlier Bildad ad Tamali in the little cabin.
It's in Chumash too. Just a minute. Right. It just escapes me now. It's a common word that's found in Chumash, and over there it actually brings the pasuk Ein Ad Yoreach V'lo Yahil.
Beginning of Kes.
No, that's definitely Adon means till when. Adon Tamalale, till when will you speak words like this? But that's the what? All right. Inyan Hasora, Kamali Odol of Shacho. Asher Oder. Is the order. Okay, it's a very easy common word, and it just escapes me right now. So the Rayas and the Tushtong here are all more complicated than that. So I'll think of the original one and at any unexpected time. Below Yahil means it won't glow. Right? So the word Yohel Oyer. Right, or behiloi neiroi ale roshi. It's always used to mean to glow. So ad yoreach, the yoreach could disappear v'lo yahel, and it won't glow. Because chofam lezaku b'yenov, if even the stars are not clear in his eyes. In other words, even a perfect creature that's in the heavens that seems to be faultless and perfect, lezaku b'yenov, and yet by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're imperfect. Everything that exist in the Bria is imperfect. The only perfect perfection in the Bria is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. It's interesting, the marshal of Ad Yoreach V'lo Yahil, because the Yoreach reflects the light of the sun, and that's why when the sun shines on it, so we receive an image and something that lights up the sky. And it's a good example of something that doesn't have its own power. But whatever it has, it's just something that's constantly produced from an outside force that generates that power. The moon is just giving off a glow that has to be put into it every single second. You take an eclipse, and suddenly the moon is dark. Surely a human being who will be eventually eaten by the worms, who ben Odom, Toileya, another way of expressing the same idea. What? Right. Baike Yochel Ad, right, to pray. Baike Yochel Ad, Bloher Yechalik Sholol. It's one of them. There's another time it's mentioned a third. But over there, too, Ad is something that's prey. Baike Yochel Ad, because he eats up his prey and he makes it disappear.